Maybe you turn off the it's that kind of a day, no problem. Pradeep, this music that you're playing is so many arities, isn't it? All over India. Is this a classical piece of music, or is it contemporary?
This song which I'm singing, actually this is from the Krishna Ashram where we go sometimes, and they are singing it often there. So from there I heard, and we liked it so much. So we thought it is not classical, it is based on a raga, but it is light, like a bhajan.
But it is based on a raga, and yeah. I hear a lot of Gayatri, Ganga arities.
Yes.
Music, huh?
That is true. It is raga Bilawal. It is a beautiful raga. So it is based on raga. It's kind of mantra chanting.
Yeah. I'm glad it's based on a raga. I don't know why I'm glad it's based on a raga.
Yeah, it is.
But I am. Thank you so much. Let's see, participants. Oh, well, it looks like the whole satsang's already established. Oh. And Chewy.
Namaste, Guruji.
Namaste, Ken. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm very well, thank you. Good to see you again, Guruji. And good afternoon to the beloved Sangha. Oh, lovely Maharaji there. Yeah.
Maharaji is lovely, you're right.
That's it. Guruji, so...
Hold on 1 minute.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Help me with something. So, Antisa, turn off the notifications. Yeah. Do not disturb the one hour. We'll see. So... Okay, thank you. Go ahead, please, Kevin.
Yes, yeah. So recently you shared with us your personal experience of tears falling when you visited your son in the ICU. So that reminded me of the story that you've told at least twice, actually, about the Buddhist monks at the time of the passing of their master. So one finding the other crying and sobbing and asking, "Why are you crying? You know about life and death." And the other said, "I'm crying because I'm crying," or something like that. I think I'm not telling it, perhaps, like you do.
You could tell it a little better.
I'm just realizing that perhaps I do not fully understand the deeper meaning of that. I'm crying because I'm crying. What does that mean in terms of, like,
well,
when tears fall?
Explaining Zen is said to be a very terrible thing, but I'll explain. It's interesting because there's a lot of elements to that story. One is that the elder monk took position. I know, you know, why are you like that? He took a very particular position, a kind of an authority position. Okay, no problem. But that's there, nevertheless. Then the also senior monk who was sobbing because his master died. He was being true. He wasn't trying to be unemotional. He wasn't trying. Trying to be detached. He knew those things, and he knew those things in the story, okay, of monks. And he says, "I'm about to go, I'm about to pass," and he gave everyone their sadhana, their work to do. And then he passed, as all things do. Mm-hmm. Get used to it, everybody. The body's going to pass. Hmm? It's inevitable. Why to fight what's inevitable? So as the senior monk was walking through the garden, he heard someone sobbing, crying, and he found another senior monk just emotionally, deeply touched that his master had departed. And he said, "You know about life and death. Why are you sobbing?" And he said, "I'm sobbing because I'm sobbing. It is as it is basically what he's saying. Mm-hmm. Should he have hid his tears to appear to be something that he is not, or should he have, or did he expose himself in such a transparent way? And what is perfection? Om Purnamadaha Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purname Vavashishate. It is as it is, perfect, whole and true. So tell me if I'm off. My sense is that you are at this point having these ideas about maybe what it really looks like to be a realized soul. And I would say that it looks pretty normal to me. My sense is it's you are at your fundamental most normal. And to realize that normal, well, that's a funny word, but I'll use it this time. And to realize that you go through all kinds of awarenesses to clear yourself of the fog of delusion. And then when the fog of delusion has dispersed, everything is as it always has been. Only you have changed, only your view. So everything else remains the same. The world goes on as it always has. I don't quite get your point about what is it that you're asking, Ken?
So basically, we've already started. No, so we know that he didn't hide his emotions, and you've mentioned a few times not to suppress our emotions. Yet we have also established that emotions always come from a prior thought. So
they come from
thought. Emotions always come from prior thoughts, thinking.
Yeah, that's true.
So would that not be a case about leaving our thoughts unchecked that leads to the emotions? And then,
well, he doesn't have to check his thoughts anymore because he doesn't have so many thoughts anymore.
Mm-hmm.
He's not running rampant with his thoughts and his desires, and he's not just all over the place and confused about what he's thinking, you see.
So is there a state of...
Excuse me, I'll go on and I'm going to hear what you have to say. I was going over this today. In the Bhagavad Gita that are given, your mind becomes serene and still. And thoughts can be there, but they're like in another room, like a television in another room. Then your thinking is extremely clear. And you will think. However, you will not be in the mire of thinking. And you will not be following every thought that you have. Mm-hmm. You don't follow them at all. Mm-hmm. They may come, they may go. This too will pass. This too will pass. So I would, if I were you, drop my confusion because you're thinking about it too much.
So I was just thinking, like, just this last bit here. Is there a state of feelings or emotions where it's so pure that is not related to thoughts at all, where sadness is just sadness and just pure sadness is not related to a thought, but, or
it
even
could
love?
Be like, it could be like that.
Yeah.
But you have to be very careful about attempting to contain ideas about what spirituality is supposed to look like and be.
Oh, yes, totally. I understand that, as a child, you know, I was always told, you know, don't cry. Why are you crying? And all that. So the whole thing about crying. And then I realized how therapeutic crying is. And then I thought, maybe now that I'm more, you know, mature, then we know when to keep those emotions in check because we can look at the thoughts that precede that.
Yes,
so
but
that's where the confusion
those
is.
Those are emotions that are stirring you to anger, to comparison, to judgment, to doubt, to frustration, to blame. Those are emotions. These emotions have to be quelled. When you're weeping because you're weeping, it's very pure already.
Thank you, Guruji.
Not because you haven't got what you want, not because somebody else is to blame for the way that you are, but all of these wild ideas that we have that stir our emotions to the point of confusion. He wasn't confused, not even a little.
Thank you, Guruji.
You're welcome. Master. May it have served you well. We will
see. Thank you, Guruji. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Hello, Max, Gabrielle.
Master Shantimaya. I've been wondering about a word that came up during listening to the first transmission on the Bhagavad Gita. And it just keeps popping up, so I thought I'd just ask you. I've been wondering about duty. The word duty, which seems to have almost completely, and at least in my world where I move, has disappeared from the vocabulary. So it was so interesting to come across the concept of duty through the Bhagavad Gita, and I thought I'd just ask you, because you don't use it either. I don't think I have heard you say, talk about duty, but I would be really interested.
Okay, well, I'm reading a very old Bhagavad Gita, and it's very wonderful, and I love its language because of such terms. Duty has disappeared from our world. And if you go to India, which I believe you have, you have not. In India, duty is seen as a privilege, as an honor. In our world, it was seen as a burden. So when you said in my world, that was exactly on the mark. Because in India, it may have changed by now. I doubt it. Because the children of India, their duty is to get good grades in school. And the whole country supports them. There's a time when they are having their tests, everyone. And the parents are expecting their children to do very well. And this is the duty of the child to do so. The duty of the child to take care of the parents in old age. The duty of the husband to take care of the wife. The duty of the wife to bring up a good child. So these are honorable places in life. These duties are honorable and they're not a burden whatsoever. We've become, our society become very entitled.
Yes.
And it's pretty much ruined the possibility of being open to anything that may teach us something, actually. We don't want to hear it. And I deserve everything I get and more. And it should be that way. So we have kind of convoluted our sense of duty. So duty in many cultures really means the privilege and the honor of bringing up a child, of taking care of the family, of taking care of the parents, of taking care is the duty. To be honest is the duty. And it's a wonderful, wonderful... I loved it when I heard it in India, because I did see the difference 30 years ago between our culture, the burden of duty, and India, and probably some other cultures as well, the honor of duty. Mm-hmm. And I'm reading a very old Bhagavad Gita, wonderful one.
I wanted to expand a little on that. So I'm reading a modern version of the Bhagavad Gita, and he kept the word duty.
If you love it, go for it. But
yes. So, yeah, I love it. I think the old version would be hard for me to read, harder. But
I don't think so. Who is the author, other than Sage Vyas and Lord Ganesha? Who is the author of the Gita that you have?
Do you know? I have Stephen Mitchell, the new translation.
Okay.
And I think it's really beautiful. But so he kept the word duty, I checked. And it goes a little deeper than that. It's not just, oh, we don't use duty anymore. So I was thinking about, I was really stunned when the moment that Krishna answers to Arjuna's troubled statement and says to him something like, don't be so unmanly. You have to fight.
That's very simplified.
And so I was really stunned at first. And
don't be stunned. He's a warrior. He's going to war.
He's born for it.
Okay, go ahead.
He's born for it. It's a tradition, and it's his duty.
That's right.
So
he was taught by sage Dronacharya to be the best warrior in the world. There's some story around that one too. It's a really good story. Would you like to hear it?
Yes.
Arjuna was the disciple of Dronacharya. And Dronacharya was the greatest teacher, master of war. Well, have you read The Art of War by Sun Tzu?
No.
You should. You should read it. It's all about the inside of yourself, as is the Bhagavad Gita. Mm. So one day, a young warrior showed up at Dronacharya's ashram, and he says, I want you to be my guru. And Dronacharya said, no. And he says, why not? And he says, I only teach war, royalty, the arts of war. And he said, I will not be your master. So this was Ekalavya. Ekalavya. And Ekalavya went into the forest, and he formed a little murti statue of Dronacharya, and he meditated on it ceaselessly. And he acquired all of Dronacharya's knowledge. This is very important. Very important. And so he took 5 arrows. And they went into a dog's teeth. Didn't hurt the dog, but the dog was shocked. And he was barking and barking and barking, and he went to Dronacharya's ashram. This dog went past Dronacharya's ashram. And Arjuna saw it, and he said, "Who did that? Who knows how to do that? Who knows how to aim so well? Who knows this particular?" It's called either, well, I don't remember the name of the forms of skill. Let's put it that way. So Dronacharya comes out and he looks and he says, "It's Eklavya." He says, "Where did you learn this?" He said, "Well, I made a little form of you and I meditated on you and I got everything that you have." And Dronacharya says, "I am your guru. Now you owe me dakshina." Well, dakshina is the payment to the guru. And Eklavya said, "What do you want?" And he said, "I want your right thumb." And Eklavya cut off the right thumb, put it in a napkin, and handed it to Dronacharya and left. The guru's words are to hit their mark. And Dronacharya had told Arjuna that he would be the greatest warrior in the world, but Dronacharya knew that Eklavya was the greatest, and he had to stop it. And Eklavya got everything he wanted. He didn't need his right thumb, and he didn't need to be a warrior anymore. So he gave it to Dronacharya. So these stories, these great stories, are very, very powerful and very deeply meaningful if you don't get emotionally involved. If you just look at them and see what's coming at you in terms of the wisdom that's held within it, then you'll get the story. Otherwise, you'll be weeping and moaning and groaning about, why is it like that? It is like that. That's the way it is. Mm-hmm. And Arjuna was a warrior.
Yes.
And after the visit of Eklavya, he was said to be the greatest warrior in the world. And that's what he
was. Sorry. So since this showed up, starting to get into the Bhagavad Gita themes, I was wondering also about if the relationship, I suppose there is a relationship between duty and service, or has the word been replaced from duty to service? Because I was wondering.
It could be.
Yes.
But duty carries a kind of nobility. And service is a servitude.
Yes.
And, which is beautiful. I, in my sense, the only reason we're alive is to serve.
Mm.
So, like that. And Krishna gave Arjuna immediately the teachings of non-duality,
yes,
non-body, non-mind, non-thought, actuality of the spirit within you is the fundamental nature of who you are. So he learned that. Well, Arjuna heard it. I don't know if Arjuna got it or not. I continue to say so. But he got that great teaching in the moment of weakness, in the moment of emotional attachment, deep emotional attachment, and the refusal to complete his duty, because he was going to kill his uncles and cousins and grandfathers and fathers and grandnephews, and he was going to war like that. It was a big deal.
Yes.
It was huge. But you're going to get a lot of, I can already see it in Madhu, a lot of this, ho, 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 ho. You know, you listen to this story, you're not attached to the story. What comes at you and out of you is extremely subtle and fine wisdom. When you can just listen to the story without tearing it apart, evaluating the right and wrong in it, and all of that.
Mm.
Yeah, that's what the Bhagavad Gita is all about. And then Krishna takes Arjuna pretty much out of the war, and they're in the middle of this battlefield, and he's giving him incredible, incredible teachings. And yeah, there it is. I just offered the second one today, but I have to edit it to see if it's good enough for you.
Mm. So last part of my multi-parted question. To take it to the intimate part point, well, obviously there's something about duty that keeps, that stays with me. So I was wondering, in a world,
did I lose you?
Sense,
I
love. Sorry?
No, go ahead, please, Gabrielle. Okay. I lost you for a moment.
Without having been born into any sense of duty and having no concept of it, like traditionally, I wonder whether there, it is an important part to be mindful of on the spiritual path, to...
I think so, because as you said, you can change, the word to your spiritual trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
You can change the word, but duty, at least in some cultures, holds a very special place of nobility.
Mm-hmm.
It's a noble act of a human being. Mm-hmm. It's my duty to serve you. This is for certain. And it's such an honor to know you and to have the opportunity to serve you. That's my duty.
We are so lucky.
And it's the only duty I have in life. All other duties are secondary, but not really secondary. This is just the light of the life. Mm-hmm. Secondary is the wrong term.
Thank you, Shantimai. I have a sense that I will keep an eye on this, and the Bhagavad Gita will give me lots of opportunities to just see what comes, what touches.
Yeah, see what comes at you, see what comes out of you.
Yes.
When you learn to listen without, Krishna tells Arjuna, I will teach you because you have not a carping spirit. Carping means... I have feelings, I have ideas, I have judgments about this. When you can listen without any of that, you'll get the total understanding from within yourself. Not even the scripture. The scripture is a reminder of what's within you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
There you go.
Namaste.
Go for it, please.
I want to share the last satsang had a very strong effect on me. There was a lot of points, but the one point I want to share is you had this conversation with the young man from India. I don't know his name. And he...
Kunwara. Yeah, that's it. Go ahead, please.
He spoke about the grace from the guru. And after that, I realized once more that I was carried by a wave of happiness since I came back from TDS. And sometimes I thought I do the things good. And after this satsang last week, I came in a state of pause and reflect that.
Please go ahead. Come to the point for me, please.
Yeah. And I realized that it is not that I do so much. It is really what I received and what I receive from the grace and the blessing from you that I wanted to share.
Thank you. My master, Maharaji, I have told this story many, many times. I'm going to tell you. First off, Guru is within you. The master is within you. And you are discovering that that is so. I would say thank God. Thank God for that. What God is, who God is, I do not know. But it's evident to me that in this dreaming called life, there is well, I cannot say. The dreamer, the dreaming. Nevertheless, Maharaji, I was sitting with Maharaji a long time ago. And I've told this story many times. It's a Sikh man came to our ashram and he said to Maharaji, because he loved one of Maharaji's disciples very much in a very clear way. And he said, Maharaji, I have such reverence for this person, but they don't seem to move along. They just seem to always kind of be stuck in the same place. I don't like the word stuck because I don't agree with that. But this is what he said. And he said, Maharaji, you've given so much grace to this person, which is true. A lot of attention, a lot of love, and a lot of kindness to this person. And he says, why does this person not change, excel more than they do? And Maharaji said, there's three graces, three. There's God's grace, which means we have an earth. We have a dreaming. We have a life. We have food. We have a day. We have a night. We have a first breath. We have a last breath and everything in between. That could be called the grace of God. It could be called that. Don't fight with it. It could just be called that. He said, then there's Guru's grace. And Guru's grace is to encourage you to discover what is within you, that your life is excellent, that your view of life is awakened, and that you will realize your true nature through this relationship, the grace of this relationship. And then there's one's own grace. Where one is receptive, one is true to oneself. There's a lot in that. Huh? He says all three graces. And he said, if one of them is missing, not much happens. And he says, it's usually one's own grace that is missing. And I saw, when he was speaking, I saw this stone wheel turning. and I saw an axe on the ground and no one to pick it up and sharpen it. Or that somebody did pick it up and sharpen it. So it's a three grace point. I like that very much because I feel there is grace in the Master, and yet the Master's within you. And I feel that well, I'll let it be at that. My sense is the Master is graceful because the Master has had the honor from their Master to serve. So if you call service grace, okay. Yeah, it's not a position. So whatever you get out of our relationship, there's many graces that come out of you and for you. And what does grace mean? It means I see. Because grace can be hidden in some very difficult situations.
I'm very grateful about this relationship or to receive this.
Me too. What would I do without you? Yeah, I don't have to. I don't have to do anything without you. Here you are. Thank you.
Thank you. I love you.
I love you too. Love is easy. Mm-hmm. It's the natural state of nature, isn't it? Take care.
You too.
Chintamani.
Namaste, Shantimai. Namaste, Sangha.
Shanti. I like the painting behind you. I know that you did it.
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
Oh, it's just it's an abstract, but it was in my dad's living room.
It's an abstract, is it?
Yeah, sort of. My dad always saw a lady in there, and it was a favorite of my dad.
Oh, good.
And I wanted to thank you and the whole Sangha for the last 3 years. Incredible support, love, and candles and prayers have been lit for my dad's passing throughout the world. So many, many thanks. And I wanted to share there. Millions of beautiful stories. So one I want to share.
Okay.
The concept of the third birth, as the Vedas say, that you shared with me, that in the Vedas they don't talk about death, but about the third birth.
They don't talk about death what? What is that?
About dying, but they talk about the third birthing.
Oh, yeah, the last breath is a third birth.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And that concept it was so incredible. My dad was 3 days in hospital, and the last day we said we just gonna have palliative we don't give medicines or oxygen anymore. So the doctor said this might take now another 2-3 days till he passes. And I remember sitting on my dad's bed and holding his hand, and I said, okay, Dad, now this also we're going to do together now. And I said, you relax, Dad, just relax, relax. And his mate had died 3 weeks before him. So I said, you can go with Richie and she knows the way. Just go, 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 Dad. And only 3 hours later, 2-3 hours later, he has passed.
Mm-hmm.
And that was so, it was really an experience for me of the third birth. I wasn't there when he left his body because I had asked nurses to change his position for a particular reason. And I went out. They asked me to go out. I went out with Omani. We went for the walk that we always did with my dad. I did too. And when I came back, I put my cheek on his cheek. And I heard him breathing. I could hear him breathing. And the next day I talked to my brother on the phone who was there by himself. I gave him the space and he was there much later. And I said, you know what? I heard Dad breathing. And he goes, me too. I heard him breathing.
This is so, after he had passed?
Yes. And I put my hand just to make sure. Of course, there was no breath, but we both have heard him breathing. So that was just incredibly beautiful.
That's a good story.
Yeah.
That's How are you now?
Well, I just thought of Kang Shui too about his question. I'm very good. I cry. I feel sometimes a sadness that is just feels like my heart breaks into million of pieces. But at the same time, there had been so much beauty with my dad, and it's just a new way of being with him. He is not in his physical form, but he is absolutely present. I had told him he will be a star in the skies, and I got a ring from him. And I said, that's a magic ring. I will go on the balcony and sing our song and I will look, but you have to blink. So I was really the first 2 days every day on the balcony because he asked me, you promise me that? I said, sure, Dad. You know? And there had been no blinking and nobody. I was like a little kid. I was, what's happening here, you know? So the other day I sat and I have a big picture photograph that talks to me. And I said, Dad, what's going on? Why are you not giving me a sign? And he said, when you are absolutely silent, I'm there with you all of the time. And that's so, he's just so present. That love, that
love will also detach you.
Sorry?
That love will also detach you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But there was, has been and is so much beauty that it's, I cry when it comes and then I'm very, very happy for everything. In deep, deep gratitude, I considered how many people have the blessing to die on a bed, how many people are dying every moment on planet. He was an old man.
Last breath belongs to God. And I don't think you can compare one person's departure to another.
Absolutely not. And yet the gratitude for the way that he passed is just beautiful. Yeah.
Sure. It sounds very poetic. Maybe you write some of this poetry down. Mm. Will you come to India this year?
I haven't decided yet. One thing is my mom now has a fractured bone in her spine. She is a little bit... Let's see how that unfolds all. And the other thing is that with India, I will book very shortly before.
We will see.
I keep it open for that reason. Yeah, just I Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Jinji.
Thank you.
Namaste.
Namaste.
Mandana?
Namaste, Shantimai.
Namaste. How are you in Israel?
Very good. I'm good. And
I'm glad to hear that.
And I really wanted to just express my gratitude, my immense gratitude to what I've learned through you, with you, from you, to myself. It's a hard time in Israel, you know? It is hard. I have friends that were murdered and kidnapped, and I got fired from my job, and my family's in India and can't come back to Israel because there aren't any flights here. And we have to run to the bomb shelters. You know, it's quite tough. But I really feel like a rock on the Ganga. I feel like this beautiful big rock with all that mica glitter. I am just fully here, you know, fully.
I'm really glad.
Fully
you
here.
You know, I had the sense that this mess is going to wake up a lot of people. They're going to be so tired of this kind of human interaction that it will diminish eventually. We have no time. We have no time constraints or knowledge about that. But I'm very touched to hear how you are.
And I have Durga Murthy with me here. And I am with her and she's with me. And I really, really pray that everybody shall win. You know, everybody shall find resolution in whatever's happening. And I'm not talking about winning the fighting, you know? I'm talking about, like, should find benefit in this madness.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right, that everybody must win. This is the only way that that people will wake up.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I also see the immense effect it has on anybody around me, you know, being a rock. In whatever it is very touching for people around. People feel calmed by having a presence like that. You know,
absolutely. And when you are true and calm, then you are benefiting everyone.
Extreme beauty, and I'm really extremely grateful for this. I feel as if 51 years I've been on a journey for this moment, you know, for this moment only. And it feels very, very beautiful. And the beauty around is, you know, there's a war and it's horrible. But there's a spring over here and there's the Sea of Galilee where nobody's going today. I take my boat, go out into the Sea of Galilee. There's nobody there, nothing happening, no speedboats. nobody disturbing the peace. It's just extremely, extremely beautiful. Extremely beautiful. And war is happening. There's something inside of me I cannot even explain, or I cannot, you know, I don't understand where it comes from. It does feel just like something which is there, unexplainable. It's not rational. It's not anything. It's just, I'm here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and you're there for everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone. We lose our sides when we live through the love in our heart.
Yes. There cannot be sides in anything, you know. Sometimes I think, how can there be a side? You know, we are all mothers. There can't be sides. We all want the same thing. We all want our kittens to be happy. That's all we want in life. You know, not all, but that's a very big thing which is common to everybody. Everybody just wants their children to smile. That's it. But there cannot be sides in this.
I agree.
And thank you so much, Shantimai, for showing me this way.
Take others with you. Namaste.
Namaste.
Devi.
Hello. I am touched by all the messages, all the talking on this satsang, like almost lost the question I had. Greetings. I have a question about the relation of spirituality and healing. The way I see spirituality brings a lot of openings of perceptions, and from my own experience, sometimes I have traumas that doesn't allow us to fully embody this new vision.
Doesn't fully allow what, please?
Doesn't allow me to fully embody. I can see rationally this new visions, like everything is one, everything is connected, but I sometimes feel just, some...
Hold on. Those are just statements. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. So the things that we need to go one step more is not only listening and understanding rationally the statement, we need to embody the statement, right? To feel it, to live it, to experience it, right?
To live it.
Yeah. And I feel that healing is needed many times to reach this embodied understanding.
Why?
Sorry?
Why? Why is healing necessary to reach that? What does it mean by healing? I would ask that. What do you mean by healing?
Maybe this is also part of my question, actually, in a sense that I feel that I go a lot deeper in spirituality in my therapy. a lot deeper in spirituality, meaning...
They don't mix so well. therapy and spirituality don't mix so well. You choose your spirituality over your therapy. And you may not need therapy.
Okay, I would love to hear more.
Look, just live committed to. What are you committed to? And what kind of therapies are we talking about? And what is the end goal of the therapy? And how long do you stay in those particular atmospheres of therapy? And does it go over and over and over again? And once that you are done with one therapy, you need to go to another therapy. Why not go to love? and let that carry you and let it push you and let it challenge you, because it's a very arduous pathway. Very, very, very arduous. I'm not, and it wouldn't matter whether I am or not, I'm not against therapies per se. But when will you come out of your heart, out of the wisdom of your heart? Because it's there. You don't have to have a therapy for it. And you might have to have therapy for something else. I'm not questioning that. I'm talking about something else. When will you live committed to, deeply committed to, learning and unlearning and moving through and being profoundly challenged by love? Are you there? Your eyes are blinking. Yeah. It looks like you're still alive.
I'm just thinking that, yeah, I really want to do this. I really want to go this path.
You know, there's one thing about wanting. It's always in the future. So, you are what you're seeking. And there's some profound keys to unlocking the actuality of that. Love is a way, compassion. It is the turning of the earth. It is water. It is seeing in oneself and other the inseparable truth, that it is unselfish moving through life. And that would be enough for a few lifetimes, just to go that way. A few lifetimes would work really well. I mean, we even question these, we even have this question, how do I love myself? You know, I would really love to meet the person who brought that onto the planet in all of these kind of trendy spiritualities to create this doubt in you that you do love yourself and what that looks like and what it means. I say to you, it's drinking my cup of Java, looking at you on the other side of the screen, sleeping when I need it, eating when I need it, is self-love. Warming my body under a blanket is self-love. Choosing the clothes that I wear is self-love, and we doubt ourselves. I don't get this. I really don't like this whole money-making facade of how do I love myself. You're going to ask that question for the rest of your life because you're never going to say you do. And the actuality of it is you do every single moment of your life. You can think you don't. That's the problem that you create. But you do. You choose good things for yourself. You choose. You're in a state of self-love. Take the teachings of love. They're very, 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 very demanding. And remember, Rumi said, choose the path that demands everything from you. Love will do it. Love is wisdom. not smarts. Anyone can be smart. Anyone who's smart doesn't need necessarily mean they're wise. So I'm not a real good one to talk therapies with, although I think they must be really good. I just don't like the consistent and constant attempting to move something out of the way and becoming something when you already are what you are seeking. And that we will support and encourage every living being to see that within themselves. And they will also encourage every single being to see that within themselves. And the guru, master, emerges in love and wisdom. And is already within you, fully developed. You just have to move that way. It's demanding, very demanding, really good for you. Whatever's really demanding in terms of benefit for yourself and what is called other is extremely fine, sometimes very subtle. But you are willing to uncover what that means to your life and live in that way. All is one. It's absolutely accurate. But people just kind of roll it off their tongue and we're all one. Okay. And never see, well, I can't say never. I would say rarely seem to live that and really truly discover the meaning of that. I'm 100% not for trendy spirituality. I don't like it. I find it boring and not useful and oftentimes deceptive. You have everything that you're seeking, and it's only a matter of uncovering that and being true to that, and it will emerge from you, 100% sure. What do you want? In Krishna's Bhagavad Gita, the chapter 2, he's talking to Arjuna about array of desires. And he says also, you know, there comes a time when you're not even interested in the pleasures of life anymore. Why is that? Are we going to miss the pleasures of life? No, we're not. Because the simple and marvelous obviousness of what is takes over, and one does not need to be entertained. One is in a state of peaceful bliss. Be in the world, but not of it. I have a very hard time with trendy spirituality. I don't like it. Jesus spoke well. Buddha spoke well. Rumi spoke well. Maharaji spoke well. It's the depths of what's already within you that you are discovering by uncovering it through dedication to love. And then you find out love is not what you thought it was at all. Ooh. And it won't leave you. And you're helpless in it. And that's extraordinarily beautiful. There's nothing like it. Nothing. So that's why Krishna was telling Arjuna, you'll lose your interest in running after your desires and what you think is pleasurable, because this too will pass. And you will rise, so to speak, not over anybody. It has nothing to do with anyone else. And you will rise to the peak of awareness of how exquisite and mysterious all of life is. You are. And there's something, you know, one time a guy asked me, what pleases you? What makes you happy? I said, nothing makes me happy. And he says, oh, what does that mean? And I said, I am self-satisfied. It's enough to hear the river. It's enough to see the night. It's enough to have rest. It's enough to love you. It's enough. It's enough. It's enough. It's overwhelmingly subtle and beautiful. And all the pleasures of the world, you can still have them. But we don't cling to them or hanker after them, because our heart is functioning and active and guiding us. I don't have a lot of faith in people telling you how to proceed when they themselves don't know how to proceed. Sometimes they know, and that's beautiful. But, well, anyhow, I think your best therapy is to go to your heart and live from there. Boy, what a challenge. Good one, isn't it? Yes. It's incredible, isn't it? Yes. So there you go.
I'm excited to go to PDX.
It's our duty. I see Gabrielle going, yes. It's what we're seeking. Okay, namaste. And the beauty, one of the beautiful natures of love is you have to be what you say you are. Otherwise, you will trip over yourself. And you'll fall on your nose. And it's a very lovely falling on your nose, because it says, get up and be right with yourself. Be true to yourself. Like the monk who was crying. Like Ekalavya, who said, I don't need anything anymore. You can have whatever you want. Like Maharaji says, one's own grace has to be functioning. Isn't it true? Yeah. And we're going to make all kinds of little missteps. We're going to be foolish. We're going to be irritated, and we say, well, we failed. No, you haven't failed. You just ran into something for a moment. Not a big deal. Let it be. Carry on. No? I would say so. I would say so. Anyhow, I'm saying so. Whether you agree or disagree, I do not know. Well, we've been on satsang for a very long time. So it felt like a minute. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to seeing you again, Chintamani. Too much time has passed between us. So I will wait for you.
Yes. I just haven't decided yet, but I just look how I feel the world is turning so fast and things are just...
Whether you go to India or not, I will expect to see you sometime soon. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
Namaste.
Namaste.
Thank you.
Thank you. Nice. Very nice. I want to make a little statement here to Kenchui here at the end of the satsang. See you in India. Maybe you will be playing for us a lot there. What do you think? Pradeep, huh?
Yes.
Yes, we come to India. We have booked a flight already. We have booked a flat.
Yeah, for 1 month.
Good.
Yes, we should play.
Yes, thank you for playing for us today.
Oh, yes.
And Ken, it's not that our emotions dry up like a wilted flower. It's more that they're mirror-like and they're not pushed into storms so easily. More of a placid lake. And sometimes they get pushed and sometimes they don't. But we get into a place where our emotional field is broad of scope and reflective. We don't dry up like, like autumn wheat or something like that. It's not like... You understand?
Yes, Guruji.
I love you. Take care.
Thank you. I love you too. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Of course. Never doubt that, Guruji. Because I never
doubt you, Ken. I 100% never doubt you, Ken. You're Ken is always Ken. And that's the best part of all. Namaste.
Namaste.